Hey guys, Michael, alcoholic.
Hey, Michael.
Yeah, Manas, what's up, man? Good to see you, bro. Sorry about that. Sometimes I lose focus. What's up, brother? Glad you're here. So, I'm Michael. I'm alcoholic. So, guys, just a quick catch up. So, 2 weeks ago, we read about the third step, and you know, gave you guys a little of like my experience on how like life ran on self-will hardly was a success for me. And and then last week we talked about like resentments, and I got to share some experience with you that I went through personally in doing a resentment with a sponsor. For those that are new, and that don't know me and that weren't here the past few weeks, I have a sponsor, and my sobriety date's October 4th of 2018, and I honestly, even though I'm on this side, I can honestly tell you, I had an experience working the steps with another person, and I don't know all these words. But I'm going to do my best to finish up with where we left off last week. So last week we left off on page 67, and we left off on the bottom where it says, "Notice that word fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, the employers, and the wife. This short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. It was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. But did we not, we ourselves, set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. We reviewed our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper." So last week, I was kind of like showing you guys, I showed you guys my book and how I originally was telling you guys, how I had, my sponsor, he had me write, resentments and fears in the back of my book. And, so I had, wrote down my fears, so we put them on paper. Even though we had no resentment in connection with them, we asked ourselves why we had them. Wasn't it because self-reliance failed us? Self-reliance was good so far as it went, but it didn't go far enough. Some of us once had great self-confidence, but it didn't fully solve the fear problem or any other. When it made us cocky, it was worse. Real quick, right? I just want to say, when I was doing a fear inventory with my sponsor, I had put, I didn't really understand the depths of, what do you mean, fears, but going through my resentments, and even though there was no connection per se, it kind of when I got to see my mistake, when I got to see where fear did creep up, I started to understand more. But originally I had put down fear of the unknown and fear of God and fear of rejection, and I had put all these things, and I only had 1, 2, 3, 4, I only had 6 fears, right? And my sponsor, I presented that with my sponsor, and he was like, "Yeah, this fear thing's much deeper than that, And he was like, and then he started going down all these different fears, and some of them were fear of being judged, or fear of what people think of me, or fear of success. He just started bringing up all these different things, and And I started realizing, I'm like, oh, you know what? You know, yeah, I had that too, you know? And see, once again, like, I got to work with another man. Like, I got to work with a sponsor because, you know, if you leave this to myself, I'm going to put the bare minimum, nor I'm not going to really understand what to put down, or I won't even know how to dive deep, you know? And so I was grateful for getting a sponsor because the sponsor kind of like broke me down a little bit, you know, to really dig deep, you know, and to go and, you know, and to go to God with it. And, you know, and so it's kind of like what my experience was. So I was like writing down all these fears and, you know, and yeah, man, like, so I would put fears, you know, all on one side. And then, you know, and then over here, do I see where self-reliance failed me? And, you know, and when I started like explaining certain fears to my sponsor and, you know, and once again, right, like I could never see myself, but like when I started like explaining this, I kind of like, you know, like, and I had to answer that question honestly. And I'm like, yeah, you know, I guess it really did fail me, you know, and, you know, and once again, so like going from like doing a resentment and then doing this fear thing, you know, I'm being able to like see the problem, you know, and I make these problems myself, you know, a little bit of fear and I'll do some crazy stuff, you know. But perhaps there's a better way we think so, for we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting or relying upon a God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role He assigns, just to the extent that what do we do as we think He would have us and humbly rely on Him? Does He enable us to match calamity with serenity? You know, and then it goes on. We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let Him demonstrate through us what He can do. We asked Him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what He would have us be. At once, we commenced to outgrow fear. So, like, you know, and that's what, like, my sponsor had me do. Like, so, like, once again, once I wrote down the fears, you know, do I actually see, like, how I set the ball rolling? Like, how this actually failed me? And then if so, you know, he had me, like, write down, you know, this prayer, God, take away my fear of the unknown and direct my attention toward what You would have me be. You know, God, take away my fear of rejection and direct my attention toward what You would have me be. And so, you know, when I'm a newcomer, dude, and I don't know nothing, and, you know, and I'm doing this work early on, and I just now recently get a job because I'm hireable again, right? And, you know, and immediately I get hit with, you know, certain fears, you know, fear of... I used to get fears of like, am I doing this right? You know, and not really sure if I'm doing this right. And I'm the type of person, if that fear creeps in and I allow myself to live in that fear, I will create all kinds of like extra work that was completely unnecessary. And then what maybe perhaps I was supposed to do, and it was going to give me a specific result, I'll take myself further away from that result, you know, and then what I originally wanted to do never really materializes. So early on, like, I would hold on to these prayers, you know, like I told you, I wasn't a praying man, you know, like, that's why, dude, if anything, I came here to scoff, and that's exactly what I scoffed halfway through this program, you know, like, at moments. I didn't know how to pray, but, you know, I just knew that, like, when these fears would crop up inside of me, I knew to, like, turn them over immediately. I knew to call someone. I knew to just go pause and do a simple prayer. These prayers kind of saved my life, you know, and I'm grateful for them. Today, you know, like, I have a solution, you know, today... when these fears crop up, I'm able to, I'm able to pause. I'm able to meditate. I'm able to play the tape out. I'm able to, see the solution in hand. I'm able to look at the picture, as a whole, where in the very beginning, before I do this work, I don't see the whole picture because, once again, I'm not through the whole, I'm not through the rest of the steps yet. You know what I'm saying, right? So I have to just keep going. And I like where it says, I had to have courage. I had to continue on. I had to continue to believe, continue to have faith, and not just feed in to 30 years of what I'm used to feeding into, I had to move forward and just let go absolutely and trust, that what these AAs and what they're telling me, it does work. And I would go on and I would have these little experiences. So moving forward, right now about sex, many of us needed an overhauling there, but above all, we try to be sensible on this question. It is so easy to get way off the track. Here we find the human opinions running to extremes. Absurd extremes, perhaps, on set of voices cry that sex is a lust of our lower nature, a base necessity of procreation. Then we have the voices who cry for sex and more sex, who bewail the institution of marriage, who think that most troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes. They think we do not have enough of it, or that it isn't the right kind. They see its significance everywhere. One school would allow man no flavor for his fare, and the other would have us all on a straight pepper diet. We want to stay out of this controversy. We don't want to be the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. We all have sex problems. We hardly be human if we didn't. What can we do about them? We've reviewed our own conduct over the past years. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, and inconsiderate? Whom did we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got this all down on paper and looked at it. And so, for me, once again, right, what my sponsor had me do is he had me, make the list. And, of all the people that I had, obviously, these type of relationships with. And, and then on top, there was this thing, what did I do to cause the harm? And, I had certain people on here and there was this same pattern, just to do one with you, so you understand what I did, there was this girl, Jen, that I was in a relationship with and, I lied, I cheated, I let her on, I took advantage, I fired her, I used her and fed her for drugs, I abandoned her, she got pregnant. I told her to go, I don't want to have anything to do with that. You know what I mean? Right? Just the whole nine yards. And I have so many other relationships that look just like that. Angelica used her solely for sex, lied, misled her on. You know what I mean? Right? I would go on and I would keep doing, I would write down. And now mind you, these were all straight to the point, I got to have the deeper one-on-one conversation with the sponsor. I'm just giving you, what came out, and there was a pattern that I got to see in all these relationships. Now, I'm not going to lie, right? I was dating who's my wife today, and she's an AA. And she was further along in the steps than I was when I came around. And I remember doing this sex inventory. And I remember I was doing it on my lunch break at work. And I was just writing it down. And I'm doing this and I'm in tears. I'm literally overwhelmed in tears. And because I felt convicted. Like how could I have done this to these people, you know? And I ended up calling. I remember I called my who's my wife, you know, and I called her and I was like, "Hey, Allison," you know, and I'm calling her and I'm crying and she's like, "Hey, what's going on?" I'm like, "Hey, I just want to tell you I love you," and you know, and she was like, "Oh, that's nice, you know, everything okay?" And I was like, "Well, to be honest with you, I'm doing this sex inventory and you know, and I don't want to ever treat you the way I treated these women, you know, and you know, and so, and I had an experience. I mean, listen, I would go on and I found out where I was selfish, dishonest, and inconsiderate. I was able to dive into each relationship. I was able to dig deep and really see the root causes, you know, the root defects of character that are in my makeup, you know. And, you know, and I was able to see where I caused, you know, where I aroused jealousy, suspicion, and bitterness, you know. And because once again, I did this work, and for each person, it was different. And, you know, and I'm grateful because later on, when I would have to go make amends to some of these women, you know, I got to, like, really see the problem here, you know. So when it was time for really for me to just go out there and make amends, you know, I knew exactly what I needed to say, you know, and because God had showed it to me when He had me put it to pen and paper, you know, and I'm not going to lie, I had a spiritual experience in the sex inventory. I believe it humbled me. I believe that it changed the way I would end up moving forward in relationships, because afterward I would turn the page and I would do a sex ideal and, you know, with my sponsor, and you know, and I believe my wife is that today, and that I've been living to that standard. I've been living in the principles to keep that marriage grounded and strong, and it does help me because she's also in the rooms and she understands us. You know what I mean? She's one of us. You know, and so I don't know. I'm really grateful, you know, for the sex inventory. Once again, we're nobody's arbiter of sex, you know, and everyone has a different story. You know, once again, I every piece of this inventory literally humbled me, literally, like, just jaw dropped me, you know, and I'm grateful for that because I got to see, you know, like, I got to really see, like, what a tool I was. You know, and talk about selfish and self-centeredness, talking about conceitedness, talking about, you know, like these things being the root causes, you know, like, of my makeup. Like, dude, that is so true. Like, all my life, man, I'm so stuck in self. It's all about me, you know, and I can't see what I do to other people. And then it's all about me where I don't even care when I'm drinking, when I'm drugging. You know, because the only thing that matters is the drink and the drug. Get out of my way. Don't get in my way. You know, don't ruin this thing for me. You know, and yeah, man, caused a lot of damage. But let me just keep reading. I just wanted to share that with you guys. Let me see here, where are we at here? Oh, in this way we try to shape a sane and sound idea for the future of our sex life. We subjected each relation to the test. What was it, selfish or not? We ask God to mold our ideas and help us to live up to them. We remember always that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised and loathed. Whatever our deal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow toward it. We must be willing to make amends where we have done harm, provided that we do not bring about still more harm in doing so. In other words, we treat sex as we would any other problem. In meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The right answer will come if we want it. I love that, right? If we want it, you know? If we don't want this thing, it ain't going to come, dude, you know? You're not going to be willing, you know, to move forward. God alone can judge our sex situation. Counsel with persons is often desirable, but we let God be the final judge. We realize that some people are as fanatical about sex as others are loose. We avoid hysterical thinking or advice. Suppose we fall short of the chosen idea and stumble. Does this mean we are going to get drunk? Some people tell us so, but this is only a half-truth. It depends on us and on our motives. If we are sorry for what we have done and have the honest desire to let God take us to better things, we believe we will be forgiven and will have learned our lesson. You know, real quick, I didn't know if that was going to materialize or not. You know, that I mean, I did these things because my sponsor told me to go do these things, and I didn't question it. I didn't go in with this motive of, you know, like, this is exactly what I want. This is the exact outcome that I want, that I wanted from this thing. I did it because I didn't know the outcome. And because I went in there and not knowing the outcome, God did for me what I couldn't do for myself. And I that's kind of like what that's, you know, like this ended up materializing. But it was something that, once again, like, it materialized and I didn't even know it did, you know. If we are not... if we are not sorry for our conduct continues to harm others, we are quite sure to drink. We are not theorizing. These are the facts of our experience. To the sum about sex, we earnestly pray for the right ideal, for guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity, and for the strength to do the right thing. If sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others. We think of their need to work for them. This takes us out of ourselves. It's quite the imperious urge when to yield would mean heartache. If we had been thorough about our personal inventory, we have written down a lot. We have listed and analyzed our resentments. We have begun to comprehend their futility and the fatality. We have commenced to see their terrible destructiveness. We have begun to learn tolerance, patience, and goodwill toward all men, even our enemies, for we look on them as sick people. We have listed the people we have hurt by our conduct and are willing to straighten out the past if we can. In this book, you read again and again that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. We hope you are convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from Him. If you have already made a decision and an inventory of your grosser handicaps, you have made a good beginning. That being so, you have swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about yourself. And that was really true. Page 72, into action. Having made a personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. We have admitted certain defects. We have ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. Now these are to be cast out. This requires action on our part, which, when completed, will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our defects. This brings us to the fifth step in the program of recovery mentioning in the preceding chapter. Now, mind you, right? Like, you know, when I was going through the work with my sponsor, and, you know, I didn't even know we were doing a fifth step, but like we were doing a fifth step like the whole entire time, and I didn't even know it. And then what ended up happening was like I said, we were just constantly doing this fifth step, and I didn't even know I was really doing a fifth step. And then, you know, towards the end, you know, Peter, you know, he proceeded to say, "Hey, you know, so, you know, you told me a lot of real things. You told me a lot of honest, real things." And he was like, "You told me a lot of sick things, you know." And you know, and he kind of said it like that. He was like, "Man, like, You know, he was like, you're sick, dude, you know? And yo, and so then he goes on and he proceeded, man, like, and he, you know, he was like, so Mike, you got any, like, real sick stuff buried deep down that you haven't never told a soul, you know? And dude, like, immediately, right, like, I get rushed with these two things, man, right? And I don't want to say it, you know? And I know what they are. I know what I locked deep down. I'll never tell a soul, like, you know, I threw the key out many years ago, you know? And yeah, man, I had this pit in my stomach, man. And it was, and I didn't want to say it, you know, and because I didn't want to say, I had this pit in my stomach. And within that pit that was stirring itself up in my stomach, immediately I was starting to feel the compulsion to want to use. And you know, and so once again, right? Like weeks ago, I talked about, like, you know, that threefold disease, right? Like that threefold malady, and you know, and how I'll try to fill it, man. And immediately, like, I have these two things I don't want to talk about. This guy's telling me to bring up some sick stuff, you know, that I've done in my life, and and now I'm feeling the compulsion to use, and there's a knot in my stomach. And then I got super flustered, and I got really hot. And, you know, and I heard a voice in my head, and it told me, I carried you this far. You know, I already carried you this far. And, you know, and I paused for a second after hearing that voice in my head, and I barfed these things out to my sponsor. I didn't think I would barf it out. I tried to hold on tightly to it, but, you know, I couldn't. I barfed it out, and the posture of me barfing that out was, once again, like, at that place of a dying, desperate man, at that place of just letting go absolutely. You know, like, what do I have to lose? You know, drinking robbed me from everything. Drugs robbed me from everything. You know, it ain't going to get worse. What am I going to go back under the boardwalk? What am I going to get pissed on again twice? You know what I mean? Right? Like, you know, it's already happened. You know what I mean? Right? Like, can't get that bad, you know? And so I ended up barfing that stuff out, man. And then Peter was like, man. He was like, I knew you were a sick fuck, right? And yo, and then you know, and I didn't know how to take that, dude. You know what I mean, right? Like, you know, and he was like, I love you, man. He's like, I fucking love you, man. You know, and he gave me this hug, dude. You know, and he made me feel like what was so huge to me feels so small. And, you know, and to take what was so huge all my life and to make it so small was the most freeing thing that has ever happened to me, you know. And I'm going to continue reading, because then I would go on, and then from that moment is when I would have my fifth step promise. You know what I mean? You know, in my life materialize. And then fear did slip away. And I was able to finally look at the world into the eye. And I was able to walk hand in hand in the spirit. And I would go on and have these experiences, and the obsession to drink and drug, and the obsession to just continue to live in those compulsions and those defects, they were just lifted, you know. And I haven't had those feelings. It's been over 5 years. I haven't had those feelings. Just gone, you know. So let me keep reading. This is perhaps difficult, especially discussing our defects with another person. We think we have done well enough in admitting these things to ourselves. There is doubt about that. In actual practice, we usually find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient. Many of us thought it necessary to go much further. We will be more reconciled to discussing ourselves with another person when we see good reason why we should do so. The best reason First, if we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. You know, it's interesting because, like, I would go on and I would sponsor other men, and I would see, I would get to this point with you know, with the men I would sponsor, and you know, and some of them, you know, they would be in that place of just like letting go, man. You know what I mean? And they would end up having that same experience, you know. And but then, you know, there would be some that, you know, that didn't have that. And, you know, and you know, some of them, you know, either A, they moved forward and, you know, they still maybe had another run in them or two, and, you know, and that, and they would come back down the road. I had one guy, you know, he told me that he wasn't 100% thorough, and, you know, and instead of, like, just from that moment, just coming back to the rooms and diving right back, he continued to live in his disease, and then, you know, he's no longer around. He died, you know. That was Bob. You remember Bob, right, Tom? Yeah. And, you know, just could never make it back in, and, you know, and so, you know, these little words that, you know, like, they do mean... They have powerful meaning to them. So let me see here. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep themselves certain facts. Oh, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, they have turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they got drunk. Having persevered with the rest of the program, they wondered why they fell. We think the reason is that they never completed their house cleaning. They took inventory all right, but hung on to some of the worst items in stock. They only thought they had lost their egoism and fear. They only thought they had humbled themselves, but they had not learned enough humility, fearlessness, and honesty, in the sense we find it necessary, until they told someone else all their life story. I have that highlighted because that's what it's going to take. You know, it's going to take for you to surrender all, you know, and give yourself entirely to this program and to your truth. I'm going to tell you something. You know, I think I shared this a couple weeks back, you know. Humility is a gift, you know. Believe me when I tell you, there's nothing humble in me. You know, I got humbled in this program. I wasn't seeking to get humble, you know. I wasn't expecting to get humble, you know. I got humbled. And it was the greatest gift that became, you know, that was given to me in my life. You know, it's not something that, like, I can naturally tap into on my own power. Humility comes only tapped into the power of something greater than myself. You know? On my own power, I'm still Cockhead Curtis. You know what I mean? Right? You know? Mighty Mike. You know? Egoic as all hell. You know? My way works. Yours doesn't. You know? Like, you know? Yeah, man. It's a gift, man, and it comes when we give our whole story. Because at that moment, we're truly giving everything to our higher power. We're truly turning it over in step three. More than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. He is very much the actor. To the outer world, his presence, his stage character, to this is the one he likes his fellows to see. He wants to enjoy a certain reputation, but he knows in his heart he does not deserve it. The inconsistency is made worse by the things he does on sprees. Coming to his senses, he is revolted at certain episodes he vaguely remembers. These memories are a nightmare. He trembles to think someone might have observed him. As fast as he can, he pushes the memories far inside himself. He hopes they will never see the light of day. He is under constant fear and tension that makes for more drinking. And, you know, I kind of shared a little bit about that weeks ago with you guys and what that looked like in my life. Psychologists are inclined to agree with us. We have spent thousands of dollars for examinations. We know but few instances where we have given these doctors a fair break. We have seldomly told them the whole truth, nor have we followed their advice. Unwilling to be honest with these sympathetic men, we were honest with no one else. Small wonder many in the medical profession have a low opinion of alcoholics and their chances for recovery. We must be entirely honest with someone if we are to expect to live a long or happily in this world. I have that underlined, you know. And once again, I keep sharing this over and over again. You know, we must be entirely honest. You know, we must fully give ourselves. Rightly and naturally, we think well before we choose the persons or person with whom to take this intimate and confidential step. Those of us belonging to a religious denomination which requires confession must, and of course, will want to go through the properly appointed authority whose duty it is to receive it. Though we have no religious connection, we may still do well to talk with someone ordained by an established religion. We often find such a person quick to see and understand our problem. Of course, we sometimes encounter people who do not understand alcoholics. You know what? I'm grateful I got to share that junk with my sponsor. I'm grateful I got to share that with another alcoholic. You know what I mean? You know, I'm grateful to have shared that with someone that caused, if not the same amount of chaos I have caused in my own life, you know, into his own life. That guy understood me, you know. I don't really know if a religious person at that time would have done that for me. Not saying that God couldn't work through those type of people. God can work through a donkey's ass. You know what I mean, right? Like, he could work through anyone. But I don't know. That's just not my story. You know, I do know some people where they did do that, and you know, and that does work for them. You know, that's just not my story. For me, I had to humble myself to the appointed man that I asked to sponsor me, you know, and I just had to just trust and let go. And I'll tell you one thing too. When you do a fit step with someone, that becomes the greatest bond that you'll ever have with a brother in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. That is the sacred, like, that is the most sacred thing in these rooms. Is literally, like, we become like the gatekeepers. Like, we become literally like our brother's keeper. You know, that is the most sacred thing, another one's truth. And like, when we talk about anonymity being the spiritual foundation of all humility, you know what I mean, right? Like, it's within this right here, you know, that common bond, that what happens, you know, people get free in this right here, you know. Once again, I go on these tangents. Let me see here. If we cannot or would rather not do this, we search our acquaintance for a closed mouth, understanding friend. Perhaps our doctor or psychologist will be the person. It may be one of our own family, but we cannot disclose anything to our wives or our parents which will hurt them and make them unhappy. We have no right to save our own skin at another person's expense. Such parts of our story will tell someone who will understand, yet be unaffected. The rule is we must be hard on ourselves, but always considerate of others. And, you know, and that's something, too, that I learned in this process. And I learned that more by taking someone through the work, living in love and tolerance, meeting them where they're at, you know. It's not about me, man, you know. It's not about me. And the more you move forward in these steps, the more you continue to grow, the more you realize this whole thing has never been about you, but it's been about how you're going to show up later on and how you're going to serve the newcomer, you know. And the newcomer can be, you know, it doesn't have to always be the alcoholic, right? This is also to prepare you for out there and all your affairs, You know, so how we show up in here is how we show up out there. Notwithstanding the great necessity for discussing ourselves with someone, and maybe one is so situated that there is no suitable person available, that is so, this step may be postponed only, however, if we hold ourselves in complete readiness to go through it with at the first opportunity. We say this because we are very anxious that we talk to the right person. It is important that he be able to keep confidence, that he fully understand and approve what we are driving at, that he will not try to change our plan, but we must not use this as a mere excuse to postpone. When we decide who is to hear our story, we waste no time. We have written inventory and we have prepared for a long talk. We explain to our partner what we are about to do and why we have to do it. He should realize that we are engaged upon a life and a death errand. I have that underlined, you know, because that's what it, you know, that's what it is. Most people are approached in this way will be glad to help. They will be honored by our confidence. We pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We are delighted. We can look at the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand in the spirit of the universe. Returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know Him better. Taking this book down from our shelf, we turn the page, which contains the 12 steps. Carefully reading the first 5 proposals, we ask if we have omitted anything, for we are building an arch through which we shall walk a free man at last. Is our work solid so far? I love that question. Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? How much time do I have?
10 minutes.
10 minutes? Okay. So if we can understand, if we can answer to our satisfaction when we look at step 6, we have emphasized willingness and being indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all these things which we have omitted and are objectionable? Can He now take them all, every one? If we still cling to something, we will not let go. We ask God to help us be willing. So, you know, real quick, right? You know, so I would go on, and I was told after like sharing that fifth step with my sponsor, right? Having that long talk, you know, to go spend, you know, the suggestion was like an hour meditation. You know, at that time, I still didn't even know what like meditation, you know, really what it was. And it's going to sound weird, man, but like, you know, I'll never forget that night. Like I took a bath. And, you know, and I'm just like sitting in that tub and I'm meditating on everything that I did, dude. And, you know, and I just, it felt great, man. You know, I don't have some white light experience to share with you. You know, I just know that I was different. It was completely different. I just know, like, I felt the feeling of a feather. You know, I don't know how to explain it. All I know is like, whatever weight or whatever chip that was on my shoulder was not there anymore. And, you know, and I know that's like, oh, well, that happened pretty quick, buddy. You know what I mean? But it kind of did, you know, like it felt that way. And it really, 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 really humbled me. And it really made me to want to continue to move forward and pay more attention to direction. You know, because that was like, whoa, you know, and I can only imagine how many more woes I'm about to have, you know. And so, you know, I get with my sponsor, Peter, and, you know, at the time he gives me this like paper, and this paper's like a checklist of flaws and assets, you know. And so on one side, there's like a bunch of defects of character, right? And on the other side's an asset. So, you know, going through all these defects. I'm highlighting, what I know I'm falling short to. Before I do this, I pray. I ask God to show me what my defects have been, and the pen is just, the highlighter is just moving. And, dude, I almost filled up this whole page, and it was a lot. And, but what was interesting is on each defect, there was a spiritual principle, an asset. And this would end up becoming a key for me to carry with me in my pocket. In almost every occasion or almost every place or with almost every person down the road that I would end up walking towards, I recently did a work inventory, and this inventory was specifically designed to target what my patterns were and how I showed up as an employee in all my different jobs. And each job, got its own defect of character list that I knew I fell short in. And I realized when I put them all together that there was at least four defects of character that have never been removed, that were still there. And I got to see them in each work that I had in sobriety these past 5 years, because I kept saying to myself, why can't I stay in one place? Why can't I be one of those people that gets a job, dude, and they keep that job for years, I went through I don't know how many jobs I went through these past 5 years, not a lot, but I went through, to me it's a lot, and I had to really take a good look at that. Why is this happening? Is it me or is it just them? Right. And come on. Right. It's never about them. Right. It's me, So I got to see that. And this time around, right, now that I have the new job, right, I get to pause. And believe me, I went back to basics. I'm literally, I'm sitting there even before I go into work, as I'm walking up the ramp into work, as I'm going to go clock in, I'll stop, I'll pause, I'll meditate on these four, five defects of character, and I will beg God to remove them in the workplace. Because I do not want to show up in those defects of character. Because I know I will rob myself of an opportunity. Because I have been robbing myself. And I don't care how sober you think you are. You do not arrive. There's more work that needs to be done. I was able to do this work as a whole, but every day I must continue to break these things down if I want to continue to grow. If I want to continue to become the best version of myself, the version that God wants me to be. That's why I love towards the in the on pages 85 when it talks about what we really have. Right? For those that don't know this, but it says, it is easy to let up on our spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. Dude, I can experience that in the workplace. I can experience that in my relationship. I can experience that, and I'm far from alcohol. Right? But those defects, man, That hole can come right back. We are not cured of our alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are the thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line as much as we wish. It is the proper use of the will. I still have to, every day I still have to constantly check myself. Am I continuing to live in these defects? For me, I'll alcoholically take this to a whole nother level. To live in defects of character is like to die. Right? It's the same thing to go back to drinking. I can live in the obsession of a defect of character that I ran in through on that one day, And for hours, I am literally trapped in a rabbit hole of obsession. And I allowed that little rabbit hole to rob 3-4 hours of my day, which that could have been 3-4 hours maybe picking up the phone, helping a newcomer, or 3-4 hours maybe in prayer and meditation, or 3-4 hours, you know, maybe doing something useful rather than doing something useless, right? Like, you know, so once again, right, like, not saying that that defect of character today is going to bring me back to drinking, but it definitely blocks me from God. Who wants to be blocked from God once you've experienced God in this program? You know, who wants to be blocked, you know, from having this life that I've been given to me, this big life, you know? I don't want to be blocked. So anyways, when we are ready, we say something like this: "My Creator, I'm now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me the strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen." We have completed the step 7. So, you know, and I'm going to stop there. You know, I would go on and I would have these experiences in 8 and 9. And that's for another time if I get asked to come speak on that. But, you know, what I do want to say is every day, like, you know, I have to do this deal every day. Every day I got to wake up, you know, I got to remember, you know, I'm an alcoholic, you know, outside of God in the 12 step, I'm an alcoholic. I'm a walking defect of character. I'm a walking ism, you know, and every day I have to acknowledge that. Every day I have to thank God for, you know, another opportunity, another reality to do the right next thing. You know, every day I got to check myself and my defects. Every day I got to pray and meditate. Every day I got to call other alcoholics in my network. Every day, you know, I got to continue to live in spiritual principles. I got to live in these assets, you know, and most importantly, every day I got to help someone other than myself. I got to pray for someone other than myself, you know. And it's okay to pray for yourself as long as it's along the lines where it will be useful and helpful to someone else or other people as a whole. And, you know, and that works for me, man. You know, this program has given me a way of life for all my problems and for all my affairs. And literally, it's given me everything that I have today. And I'm forever grateful. I'm grateful to be an alcoholic. I'm grateful to be in these rooms. And that's pretty much all I got for tonight. Thank you.